I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by bagging these bongos.
Yeah, right. Crazy.
Hello, and here we are at episode number 107 of the Ministry of Arts podcast. I hope you're all doing well. Everything's dandy here at the Ministry of Arts. Firstly, as ever, a big shout to our Patreon supporters. If you'd like to support the podcast for as little as £3 a month, you can follow the Patreon link in our Instagram bio. If not, that's fine. The content's here for everyone. This week, I've spent a couple of days at the Fulham Town Hall. I've been building an installation that's part of an exhibition created by Art Below. The entire exhibition covers something like 51,000 square feet, and it should be open around the start of May, but I'll give you the precise details nearer the time. And it's an exhibition, like a real exhibition, like Art on Walls exhibition. I've almost forgotten what it feels like to be in a show that isn't on screen. But there will most definitely be a podcast episode about this exhibition nearer the time. But anyway, back to this week's episode, episode number 107. You know when you see artwork by an artist that you didn't previously know, and for whatever reason it just ticks every single box? The work of today's artist done exactly that the first time I saw it. And even though we've known each other for several years, spoken loads on social media, admire each other's work, and even been in exhibitions together, we've still not actually met face to face. And even though I finally got to do a podcast episode with her, because of social distancing, we had to do it over Zoom. But that was still an excellent second best. It is, of course, Kate Murdoch. Kate uses found objects in her work, be it brassware, toys or small trinkets, all of which trigger a sort of emotive flood of nostalgic warmth as she leads you through the narrative of her work, which is pretty much a culmination of a lifelong passion for collecting. If I could give you a more accurate synopsis of Kate's work in her own words. Kate says her work is inspired by her personal experience. Her artistic practice revolves around the assemblage and installation of found objects, mostly from the everyday and dating from the last century. She is interested in objects as the clear indicators of passage of time. Wider themes of loss and remembrance run through her work, reflecting a fascination with permanence of objects versus the fragility of human existence. The theme of value and worth is central to Kate's work, and the objects presented open up opportunities of personal and political discussions around class, gender and privilege. It don't get much better than that, right? So come and earwig to the conversation I had with Kate Murdoch. and if you enjoyed it half as much as I did, you would have had a great time. Have you been coping in lockdown?
The first two, I felt I coped very well, and just got on with stuff and had a few ideas for art to sort of put stuff out there. But increasingly, I don't find this time so easy. I'm missing, well, the studio is locked down and my stuff is all in there. So I bought some stuff home allegedly to work with, but I haven't been making any work for about quite a long time. I finished this Hope piece I did, I'm thinking of things, I'm reading quite a lot,
yeah,
but in terms of, yeah, I'm just getting a bit, I'm getting a bit restless now,
yeah,
and my life hasn't changed that much. I have to say, I wasn't one for going out and all the rest of it, but I feel for my sons. I've got 22 year old twins. One's in Aberdeen, didn't come home for Christmas. He's fine. He is fine.
Yeah.
Robin came back from Liverpool University, and you know, all his plans, travelling, all the rest of it, they're all on hold. So they're the ones I feel sorry for, because they're the ones whose life's really affected. But for me personally, I think, well, my life hasn't changed that much. But I suppose, I don't know. I mean, I've sort of reached quite a strange point anyway, because I feel quite isolated, that's the truth of it, in my art work anyway. I have done for quite some time, and I think that lockdown sort of probably really made that feel much greater. And I was reading somewhere, I can't remember, but somebody put a comment on Twitter or written an article about it. It's about how your colleagues aren't your friends. And I thought, that's interesting. Because, when you go to some of these openings, I don't go to many, but if you do, and you see, hi, it's all very sort of hyped up, really. And then I was quite ill, I was in hospital 2 years ago. And it's changed the way I am anyway, the way I had to pace myself and all of that. I'm better now, but it's still sort of like, oh, okay. I think that was quite a moment for me, because it was like, oh, okay. So these people who I thought my best friends are nowhere to be seen. Some of them have been. I think it's like anything. People say with bereavement, people keep their distance. If you're ill, people keep their distance.
Yeah.
So it's just, every book on bereavement or grief tells you that. But people don't seem to, I've heard people say, after my husband died, people crossed the street rather than talk to me. They didn't know what to say. Surely people know what to say, sorry or something, rather than, imagine just crossing the street because you're so befuddled. I mean, but that is the way, I can't imagine some of these eaten, educated government advisors or
no.
They do that. I mean, don't start me on that.
How's your art practice been? Since I know you said that you haven't done much.
That's been, it's been quite sporadic. I've had moments of thinking, this is what I'm going to do. This is what, but it's also, this whole lockdown thing has brought back a lot of feelings about my dad. My dad died some years ago, but I was very close to him and I miss him a lot. And he was someone who's very interested in the world. And he died before 9/11, like in the May before that. And I remember thinking, God, he would have had so much to say about this. Very good old socialist, ex-miner, really a good person, Scottish person, really lovely. And that's brought back a lot of things about him. And of course, the pandemic's like, what would he have made of this? And what I've noticed is that I'm gravitated to work about him, which I haven't really. I've written quite a lot about him on my blog and things, but I haven't ever really done any work about Dad. But it makes me feel very sad still. I think that's probably what's happening. I'm sort of like, well, I'm not making it, but I think I'm processing quite a lot in the build up to maybe doing that.
It's funny how it's taken you 10 years to sort of get to that stage, isn't it? I mean, you've obviously had thoughts about that in the past, but for it to naturally come into your mind or into your way of thinking. It's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I I've always been very moved by your work and the shirt, the heavy lead shirt.
Oh,
and How long did that take you to get around to doing that? Fascinates me.
The initial one, I had the idea for that several years before while I was in prison, and it wasn't until I was in university to be able to make it. But that was made of, it was bronze. I've remade it out of onyx resin.
Right, okay.
Yeah, because it was bronze and it was in an edition of 7. Their bronze is just so expensive. Even if I'd just done it as cheap as I could, it was still an extremely expensive sculpture, you know. So I remade them out of onyx to make them more affordable, you know.
Did you make them much deeper?
The initial one was about 11 inches high, the second one was about 4 inches high. And I gave it to a friend to see what, you know, to see what he thought, and he put it up on the wall. And then all of a sudden it had a whole different language, you know, because before it was a standalone sculpture. Then I come to a certain size that I was comfortable with and made an addition of those.
I think I saw one image that made it look really deep, and that really sort of touched me, because it was like about the weight of it all. It's like, oh, you know, and that's what really, really struck me. And I just, I wondered how long it taken you to get to that point. It does take a long time.
What you're saying about the depth of that one looking heavy, that was the initial thought. I wanted it to make it look like it was molded from a slice of rock, as if it had been pulled out of the ground.
That's what it did, it did for me anyway,
I mean, your work is about nostalgia and memories, and I ask all the artists 7 questions.
Right.
And the first one is, how would you explain what you do to someone that doesn't know your work?
Oh, that's a good question for me, because I've never had a sort of like a ready-made answer for that. No. It is largely autobiographical. It's about things that it's from my collections. I've been a collector all my life. I've always collected, even when I was a young child. And I have all this stuff.
Does Pete refer to it as your collection? Is it a collection to you, yet boxes of stuff to him?
Do you know what? I think it's been interesting, because I had to move out of a friend's garage very quickly. Suddenly, her garage, it was like, and I sold a load of vintage clothing, and I bought all these plastic boxes with lids. And I thought, like, this is it. This is the time to do it. So I've been, and I think Pete is more involved and possibly even more attached to some of the things than I am.
Nice. That's good to hear.
And he actually designed a shed for the garden. I mean, it's massive. It makes our shed look horrible. Our garden look horrible. It was a very male approach.
It's functional,
Very functional. Looks quite ugly, and I sort of like, I try to fix myself when I go in the garden. And we're in the process of, we're going to have to put our house on the market quite soon, because Pete's, you know, everything, all the entertainment business has just gone. So we've got a lot of life changes coming up for us and things. So, you know, this shed is like, well, you know, it only took a day to probably, I'll take the day to take down. It's like, you know, honestly, you know, I mean, it might, you know, and some people go, whoa, you know. But funny enough, an artist in Oxford is looking to move to this area, and she's been asking me questions about this house, and I've been saying, well, you know. And as it's got this shed, and she'll go, oh, so I showed a picture, she's like, oh, you know, because she collects things, she makes stuff, and so what I do, I suppose, is I make small, little assemblage pieces from the stuff I've got. And it's usually around other people, my memory of other people. And I'm very interested about the whole value of stuff, because, you know, the person whose garage I had to move the stuff out of, she'd met a new man in her life, and he was like, you know, he didn't understand anything about this. All that when's Kate coming to take all that rubbish? And myself bristling a bit, like, rubbish.
The holder.
Can I show you this piece of work that was in the gallery? You know, it's like I started getting really sort of a bit edgy about that. But Yeah, so I mean, I find it very hard. I keep calling it my collection because stuff just sounds all, you know, stuff, you know. But it is essentially stuff. What I've done over lockdown, first lockdown, that's why I think I've felt a lot better emotionally because I was occupied.
Yeah.
What's happened now, I've got to a bit of the point of like, because we will put the house in the market, but there's no point me decluttering the house or the shed because I've got nowhere to put the stuff. So it's just a question of like moving boxes in a continuous circle. So, you know, it's just no point. So I've been a bit stuck myself, if that's the truth of it. But in the first lockdown, I went through every single box and I've labelled it, and it's just, it's so organised. I've probably got best part of 100 projects to get through. So I've got to live quite a long time.
And excellent.
My grandma lived until she was 102 and my mum's 90. So the genes are quite good in the female side. So I reckon, all right, 60, yeah, 40 years, you know, I could do this. So I'm now quite keen to move house and set up somewhere else and maybe keep on the studio I've got, but maybe not. I don't know. So there's lots of changes and I feel a bit frustrated. I can't get on with things, but it's patience. I mean, we've got to get through this, and it's challenging, and I'm not half as challenged as a lot of people. I'm not in a high rise back with kids on pen running around, which, you know.
But either way, it does show that when your future is in question, it affects your present quite a lot, you know?
Yeah, it does.
Which is a state of the world at the moment.
Yeah, it is. Everybody's in limbo, everybody, you know,
The first, I think, the first one of yours that I saw was 10 by 10 or 10 times 10. I don't know how you would, how the title is pronounced. And how is the title pronounced?
10 by 10, I call it. Yeah,
good,
10 by 10.
Good. Yeah. Could you tell us how that one came about?
What, 10 by 10? Yeah. When I'd moved into the studio and I knew I had to get rid of something, you know, I couldn't keep everything. So some of it had to go. And I noticed when I moved into the studio with a performance poet, I had no art. I wasn't even going to be an artist. I was going there actually to sort out my vintage clothing.
Yeah.
And as I was in an artist studio, people used to come in and say, oh my God, that's amazing. I don't know the way you put those together. And I'm like, okay, right. You know, so people assumed because I was in there, I was an artist. And as far as I was concerned, I mean, it's taken me a long time to say, yes, I'm an artist. It's taken me a long time to say, you know, oh yeah, this is a piece of work and things, you know, it has. And that is the truth. So I noticed that people were very drawn to a lot of the things, and I thought, and people thought, oh, well, it's for sale. Yeah. It's a shop. And I'm like, well, no, you know. And I was quite confused myself. I didn't have a very straight answer. Like, no, it's not a shop. I used to bristle a bit about shop, you know, I'm an artist, you know. So then Julia Alvarez, who used to be part of Deptford X in Deptford, there was a call in, I think 2008 it was, for about trade in Deptford, you know, all this sort of trade and barter and exchange and things. So I thought, oh, I could maybe respond to that. Because that is where most of my artwork comes from, is people put up an idea like, oh, I can respond to that.
Because
I have this loads of boxes, probably anything, virtually anything, somebody said, the theme around this, I've probably got a collection associated with in some way. You know, like Harry Pye, who's asked me to do a couple of shows, has said, you know, I'm doing a show about love. Oh, yeah, you know, I can respond to a lot of those things, really. So what happened with that was, it was my Nana was 100 that year. Pete and mine's sons were 10, twin sons were 10. And so I decided to have this box built, this big thing built by Adrian, who runs the Art Hub studio, and to really invest in that. I hadn't put any money into anything at that point, apart from this share of a studio. So he built this amazing box, and actually I was on holiday and he made it. And I came back and I went through stuff and I thought, well, it has to, in a way, this has to be stuff that I might feel a little bit of a pang about letting go of, because if I just filled it with stuff, it wouldn't mean anything. So So it wasn't all like that, I have to admit. Otherwise, I'd break down a bunch of special things. But some of it all meant something, whether or not it was emotional or, you know, just like gift or a bit from the past. I mean, I've left a big chunk of my past, and retrospectively, actually, what's interesting about that work, it just keeps going.
Yeah.
Just keeps going. I got an email from somebody out of the blue about 2 years ago who was the partner of an ex-partner of mine who'd come across my blog somehow.
Yeah.
I said, is that about him? It's like, whoa, where's this come from? You know, so there's been loads of stories about yeah. it. And it was inspired by this thing called a pack rat, which is a little mammal in North America, which I never actually saw, but I saw what this animal did because I had friends who lived on the edge of a lake, and they had this basement where they kept their boat. And one, I don't like rats at all. I'm quite sort of paranoid about them. And this friend Dave said, "Oh, the pack rat's been." And I thought, "Oh, fucking rat!" It's a really cute rat. It leaves things behind. And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, that's why they're called pack rats. They if they take something, they always leave something in place. So look, this has left this set of acorns yesterday. There was that there. You know, I can't remember what it was, but." So it really intrigued me.
That's,
you
know, cool, like, isn't it?
Yeah, somebody, this animal that takes something but thinks, oh, I better leave something in its place, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then the whole thing of, you know, when I was in at the studio for the first time, people were selling paintings. Well, how much you put on it? I was like, God, I have no idea. I have no idea, you know, how much you... And then you'd learn that somebody along the corridors, you know, sold their painting for 2,000 quid. It's like... You know, so the whole thing of value and worth always, yeah. always interested me because I come from a working class background. I used to work with young offenders in a sort of what, the old community schools and things. You know, I worked with lots of very poor families, and the thing they valued was like really like, you know, it just always intrigued me. Yeah. So one man had a collection of feathers around his entire living room, and the kids weren't allowed to touch them. They really pressured to this father, and yeah, so that was what it was about. It was about what if you wanted something, you weren't just putting your hand in your pocket to give me some money. You were leaving me something behind.
Yeah,
you know, what was it worth? What is that thing up there worth to you? And some people took it. I mean, I remember I did it in Hastings, and this couple came in. And it was always amazing who turned up, you know, wasn't it? Like, especially in places outside of the studio, it's much more fun.
Yeah.
This couple came and she's like, have you got it? You know, he's like digging in his bag. And they took this torch and put another one in its place. And I was like, I try not to intrude on people, but I'm really intrigued as well. And I leave a book each writing if they want it. But this couple just, they seemed to want to talk. And I said, oh, so that's interesting. So, yeah, well, I mean, we saw it in the paper because it'd been in the Hastings Times, Hastings Observer. And they said, we saw that and thought, well, you know, we don't need this big old thing now. We need a little one. So we just thought we'd swap it.
Superb.
Yeah, and then another woman came in. It was a big sort of, you know, very emotional moment when she told me about this hairbrush that belonged to her grandfather and how she felt so guilty and all these stories about her grandfather. And so, yeah, there's real extremes of how people sort of interact with it, which it's all about value and worth as well, how people value art and how they, like at Lewisham College I did it, and this sort of like, you know, boy, what is it, you know? And I said, oh, it's just, I explained to him, he went, what, so I can take anything and leave anything? And I said, yeah. You know, and he said, oh, I'll leave your stag end then. And I said, if you want to. And all the others, you can't do that. You can't do that to a lady. That's out of order. And they really got onto him. And then in the end, he sort of left 50p. He went, nice. I got this for my mum's Mother's Day. And I said, oh, that's nice then, you know. So it's just, it's very, you know. And what inspired it is this thing about how people, what they value. You know, when you see house clearances, you think, oh, You know, Deptford Market is classic. You see these boxes, like, oh, it's just such personal stuff that people just boxed it up. And, you know, I can't, it just makes me feel really sad when I see that. But
and how do you feel buying them sort of objects?
Do
you take a bit of the preciousness with it? if you buy it.
I probably give it the preciousness, I suppose. Yeah, because I think one there when I mean you see you all thought, you know, like, oh God, you know, come on, Market Traders, clear them out. It's like pop-peaks, everything, you know. I always take gloves when I go there, but yeah, I mean, I suppose I'm drawn to things that remind me of my past.
Yeah.
I'm not buying anything now because I am. I mean, occasionally I go and if I see something I can't resist, like the colour of a piece of ribbon, I think, oh, that would go so nice with that. I will. But yeah, and of course the pandemic's put set to all those sort of pleasure of going out and looking for stuff now anyway, hasn't it?
It's funny how the memories of one person can evoke memories from another, because that's what I saw when I saw your work, other than the 10x10, when I started looking at your other work. Yeah, there's other bits and pieces that I saw from yours that would remind me, you know, I could smell where I was the occasion, sitting in front of my nan's fire and she's got like little brass things on the mantelpiece. I could feel the heat from when I was a child on my legs from the fire and the smell of the coal, you know, just by seeing you had some like little Dutch brass, I think they were Dutch brass bells, white ladies in a cage.
Yes, that is what I do. I take old things and I sort of, I think the technical terms, repurpose them into something else, you know. And and interesting, that was at a show quite recently, and most people talked about the restraint of those women. They had to wear their bonnets because they didn't look, you know, and their tight bodice and all the rest of it. And one woman said, oh, I don't see, I see them totally as being this really nice group, and they're really friendly and really happy together. So it's, that was really interesting, because nobody's ever given me that interpretation before. She saw it completely differently.
And in a birdcage as well.
Yeah, in the birdcage, yeah. And she wasn't, because that work's been around for a long time, but it was out again recently in the world. And that was her opinion of it, which really surprised me. But it's nice to know that it gets different.
Yeah. Obviously with my background, when I see anything in a cage, you know, it's got a complete separate meaning to me anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, go on, sorry for butting in.
No. I was just thinking of another piece of work that I had in the studio one time. It's called Fabric of Life, and I've been working on it forever. And I don't know if I'll ever, well, the truth is the embroidery rings that make it up are expensive. So I have to sort of like justify when I can afford some more embroidery rings. Then I'd like to do 102 to mark the age of my Nana when she died. It's basically bits of fabric from her home, because when she died, it's like, right, Kate, you know, what, and there were just all these dresses and all these things, and she was a real hoarder and quite stubborn. So I've got a tea towel with a hole in it that my dad had bought, or my mum and dad bought back from Scotland. She never wants to get rid of it. So I cut a little, you know, bit out of that. So what I've got is these little snippets of her life. And one time I had it up in the studio, and we had open studios, and this man in probably in his 50s came in, and I just saw, because I often say, because I don't hear completely all of the time, and my hearing fluctuates, I really notice people's expressions a lot, you know. So I just saw this sort of like look come over this man's face, like, wow, something really affected him, you know. And then he just stood there for ages, and like people were walking around him, like, you know, and he was completely like, you know. And anyway, he went away. I thought, he doesn't, whatever he's seen that's really affects him, I don't want to sort of impose on him. And he came back and he said, God, I'm sorry, I just couldn't get over that piece of fabric. And he'd been a Bernardo's boy, and the sheet that he'd seen in one of these embroidery rings was a sheet that he remembered, you know, and it was yellow and it was floral. And there was a whole, I think it must have been the 1970s, there was a whole load of these mass-produced sort of like polyester sheets, and they were yellow, pink, mint green and blue. Don't know if you remember the bedspread they had with a white fringe round.
Yeah.
And I worked in children's home for quite a long time, so I remember them. But they must have been, the government had bought them because they were cheap, probably.
Yeah.
They were very serviceable because they were drip dry. And he said, God, it's just bought. He said, I couldn't, when I saw it, he said, it just I just froze and I said, yes, I know. I saw you. Yeah. I said, I saw you. I didn't want to say, and I'm really glad you've come back. And he said, God, you know, he said, they're not good memories. I said, no, I can imagine probably a lot of them were, you know, but that they're the bits that make you think. Some people go, what's this, a shop? And are really rude about my work. I mean, I do get a lot of like, what's this then? You know, I mean, one of my aunts left an exhibition. She said, come on, Dennis, I'm going to go home and get a few of your mum's dishes and a bit of cheese to put on a shelf. I can do this. And that's what she's like, you know, that's her all over. And it was fine. But the curator I didn't know was behind me. And so when I went off to see them off in the car, you know, it's all like a slam by. It's a bit sensitive to say, but I know the nature of the beast. It doesn't. Yeah. Sometimes it upsets me, but, you know, I'm so used to it now. Like, what's this? You know, especially, you know, painters, they're like, what are you doing? You know, and I haven't been to art college and
I was like that before. I just saw traditional painting, traditional sculpture. I could, you know, Dali was about as far off centre as I could go, you know. But other than that, anything that was conceptual, anything that I could do wasn't art, you know, because I wasn't an artist. And if I can do it, that old cliche.
Exactly. But yeah, when this curator followed me out and said, oh, God, Kate, you okay? And I said, yeah, why? And she said, I just heard that woman. I said, don't worry about it, it's my art.
Was there any art in your family growing up?
No. You know, the Constable on the wall, not the original, the, you know, the Hay Wayne on the wall, No. But a real appreciation for things and the real care and tenderness, you know, towards things. So those brass bells were on my aunt's mantelpiece and they were very much, you know, a feature of the mantelpiece and they dusted and they went back to the same place and it was assumed they would be there forever and they were. They lasted through my granny's time and my grandma's time. Then my Aunt Isabel stayed in the same house. It's a house on the coal board and, you know, it's a real respect, you know, for things, and that's what I inherited, that you looked after things and, you know, you cherished them, you know, and that in that respect. And I think my Nana and my mum's use of colour has always been quite amazing, you know. It's always been a bit off the wall. Mum remembers the time when she decorated mine and my sister's bedroom and the doctor coming because I had another ear infection and go, oh, ghastly. Her mum thinking, you could sod off, you know. But so mum was always quite adventurous with colour and you know, the neighbours a bit like, you know, what's wrong with Magnolia? But she was she loved her colours. Yeah. So in that respect, I wouldn't say it was devoid of any art, but going to an art gallery was like, no, that's not what you did. Yeah. You know, working class child in the 60s, no, we didn't go to art galleries. And art was sort of half an hour at primary school, I think.
Yeah.
And at secondary school, I met a very inspiring, I had two teachers, one did the art and one did the pottery, and they were both amazing and they really inspired me, you know. But I didn't go in down that path at all. I went into the caring profession and you know, I wish I had, but you know, I think people say my home is beautifully curated. I don't really see that, but I sort of think, yeah, it probably is. It probably is. And I haven't actually thought about it that way. I just do what I do with, oh, we've got the Kate Murdoch touch. And I don't know what that is, really. Yeah. But, you know.
Well, maybe it's not the house that's got the Kate Murdoch touch. It's the art that's got the Kate Murdoch touch.
Maybe, you know,
Your art is just an extension of what you'd have in your home anyway.
Yes, exactly. Yes, it is very much.
The objects that you have, a lot of them, as you were saying, belong to family members that have passed. How are you when it comes to selling them? Can you just see them as an object, or is there still an emotional connection to them?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting point, because I know when I did a piece of work for a show called, oh, I can't remember, This Me of Mine.
I was in it as well.
You were.
As soon as you walk in, my shirt was in the, as soon as you walked in.
The Ipswich one?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I didn't ever manage to get to Ipswich. I wasn't well enough, so I didn't see that. That's a real
Yeah, yours were upstairs, weren't they?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Jane introduced people at the end of it.
That's it.
When it got bigger and bigger.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was ill at that point and I didn't really engage with that part. That's a real shame because I have to admit, I've forgotten that. That's really sad. And I don't normally forget things like that. But that was the start of me getting quite ill. And I think I wasn't sort of, you know, I didn't even get to Ipswich, which is so unlike me. I'm very good at sort of, well, I make sure that I go in. See the shows I'm in, you know, if I possibly can, even going as far as sort of like Bradford and places, Scotland, stuff like that. And I didn't make that. Yeah. I remember having a conversation with Jane about your work.
I liked Jane. You know, she was lovely.
Yeah, she's lovely. Yeah, no, she's a lovely person to work with. Yeah, really nice. So yes, in that, I it was called It's the Little Things, and it was very much about Nana's things, even down to the little bits of soap left over.
Yeah.
And Jane very much wanted to have prices put on it. And the whole thing came, like, well, what is worth it? And I put a ridiculous price on that because I didn't want to sell it.
Yeah.
You know, so I thought if somebody, you know, what's the way, you know, if somebody give me a ridiculous price for it, then, okay, I can live with it. But it will pay for my studio for the next sort of year or whatever. But apart from that, no, it's very hard. And some things I just say that it's not for sale. But
yeah.
You know.
I mean, a lot of your work has got an emotional connection. Which piece do you think has got the strongest emotional connection?
I think it's a piece called Wrench, which none of it actually belonged to anybody I know.
Oh, wow.
It was at a time when my sons were leaving home. And I do think, you know, when you have twins, you do experience things as a sort of like double whammy. Like, you know, it's not just one and then, you know. I found the hinge I found on the top of Calton Hill in Edinburgh on New Year's Day, the big fire on New Year's Eve. And I was fishing around in the ashes looking for bits of metal. And my father was like, God, it's embarrassing, you know. And I brought that back. I thought, I'd make a nice shelf. So it's quite a big piece of metal. Yeah, make a nice shelf. The little truck is just from, it wasn't, I think it's probably my nephew's from years ago, little sort of like train track thing. And then a monkey I remember buying from a guy on Greenwich Market, and it got a crack in its neck and he let me have it for 50p. And then I found a postcard of this, you know, monkey, female, I think it's female mother monkey with a little one. And then I put I put the ceramic monkey in the truck like it was going off. And that was the point. It's about my separation from my son, their separation from each other. And it was called Wrench because it looked very like a tool. Stuff out of the toolbox. That for me, yeah. And it was a transition gallery. And it was the easiest piece of work I've ever made. Because I went in and I screwed in this shelf because it's like a hinge. So one part of the hinge, screwed that, put the other over, put the thing on it and went, you know, and it sold. It sold really, sold on the private view, which doesn't happen to me. It's like, wow, you know, and it's probably the most powerful piece of work for me that I've ever made and probably the piece of work that I would mind selling more than any other in a way, but it's sold and it's gone and I've got photographs of it. So yeah, in answer to your question, that's it. And I wonder whether that's it because it's gone. You know, I wonder that sometimes, is that piece of work so important because it's sold and now it's not in my ownership anymore.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, because your work has got such a strong emotional connection to you, do you ever wonder why the buyer purchased it?
Well, the person I know is another artist and I do know her. And she wrote to me saying that she went home and couldn't stop thinking about it. But I don't actually know. And I didn't want to pry, but lots of people made a reference to it, a bit like a Holocaust thing because of the truck and this child going off. And I wasn't conscious of that at the time. I knew it had a lot of emotion in it for me. But other people's interpretation, that's what really interests me. And I probably would see her again and be able to ask her. She did say, if I'd like to go to her house and see it on her wall, it's really sweet.
Yeah.
I'd go, which would be nice to do one day. But yeah, so.
I mean, that definitely does emit from your work, because as I said, when I saw it, I felt that as well, you
did
know?
You? Yeah.
And I went for a talk one time in your studios. I don't know if you remember. I'm pretty sure I told you about this. Someone was giving a talk in your studios. All the studios were closed, or there was no artists in the studios. And we was down the other end in Deptford. We sort of went through a little rabbit warren of studios. And as I've turned right, on the left was your studio, because I saw your 10 by 10.
Oh, okay.
Because I wasn't expecting it and I didn't know, I just turned the corner, saw it, and I was like, oh, great, it's Kate Murdoch's. Yeah. I was properly chuffed. And another little funny coincidence is that I sort of found you about the same time as I got onto Twitter.
Right.
And I also found your husband, Pete, on Twitter.
Yes.
And I was following him, and he does great posts, and you know they're great fun. And he does a lot of stuff, or he was doing a lot of stuff at the time, where he would interact with other people.
Yeah.
And I often done that. And he mentioned about art one time, and this was probably about a year down the line of me connecting with you.
Yeah, how funny!
And I said to him, "Oh, he said, oh, my wife's an artist," and I went, "Oh, is she? What's her name? I'll have a look online."
Oh, how funny.
And he said, "You know her. It's Kate Murdoch." And I was like, oh, great.
That's right, because definitely told me about your
superb
shirt and your, yeah.
I was so chuffed. And then every time I see his name pop up on the telly as one of the writers, it, you know, it takes me back to that moment. Yeah, it was funny. What'd you do to relax, Kate?
I read a lot. I fell over about 6 weeks ago, and I've got a whole series of physio exercises which are quite time consuming. So I've been going to Pilates for years once a week, but because the studio is very small and cramped, I haven't wanted to risk being in there. So I've been doing Pilates at home. I walk a lot, and I love gardening, even though I'm shedding it now. I don't listen to music as much as I'd like to. I find it quite hard to focus on music and stuff, but I love my telly. I love Modern Family and all those sort of, you know, American Sky programs. I've been watching a lot of telly over I leave it to the evening. I'm not as decadent to watch it in the day, but yeah.
One of the questions I've got here, Kate, is if there was you and five other artists, past and present, what would your ideal group show be?
Okay. Well, Louise Bourgeois has to be right up there.
Nice.
Susan Hiller.
Oh, yeah.
Funny, I saw Joseph Cornell's work in, I think, the Royal College somewhere 3 or 4 years ago, and I was quite disappointed because he'd been right up there with who I thought was one of my favourite artists. And it was too, it just felt too tame for me now. But his work was what inspired me in 1980. And that's, again, just, I was in New York at the time, and I actually, I was living in upstate New York, and I went to New York and I saw his work in this box and was completely blown away there. And the other one is just somebody who I saw her work in sounds very, very, you know, ooh, did you? But I happened to be in Paris and it happened to be on, was Annette Messager. So that my five? Have I got my five there? But I mean, Joseph Cornell, you know, I mean, there are others. I can't really. And in real life, present day, I don't know. It's hard. I don't know. It's sort of.
Well, it's a hard question anyway to narrow down five, but it's going to change. If I ask you again tomorrow, it could be five different people completely, you know?
Yeah, definitely. One of the people, and I'm not that aware of her work, but I'm aware of her writing, is somebody called Anne Truitt. And I'm rereading a book called Day Book, and it's about her whole sort of her life as a mother, as a wife, as an artist, and then she gets divorced and she's got three children, and you know, so it's a very real very honest account of what it's like to be an artist. It's not just about I'm an artist and sort of Swanee studio having loads of money, which I mean there are a lot of those around, but you know, it's about the reality and it's very good. I thoroughly recommend it. So I'm reading it for the second time and actually enjoying it more this time round than before, probably because I'm more into reading. I think before, even though I said I coped with the first lockdown better, I think it's all a bit surface and a bit sort of, yes, okay, so we have to do this. It's all very controlled, whereas I think I've just let myself go, okay, you know, and now I'm a bit more in tune with going with the flow a bit more.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what it was, because at the start of the lockdown, you had a sort of a little bit of warning. You readjusted your mind. It was just a new way of life.
Yeah, well, now,
by the time we get to where we are 9 months later, you've sort of had enough of it. You've all of that trying you've done. Yeah, it is very difficult. Hey, if you wasn't an artist, what would you like to be?
A dancer.
Nice.
Yeah, even is, you know, be a bit hard now with these old bones. But that's what I always wanted to be. And my dance teacher thought I should be and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I mean, it's the old thing of, you know, I think my parents wouldn't have prevented me. But, you know, to go to university then was expensive and, you know.
Yeah. And what type of dance was it?
Contemporary dance, I think. I don't, you know, ballet is always, I don't go to the ballet, it's far too expensive, but I do get treated occasionally with birthdays and Christmases and things. But I prefer contemporary dance and I love the Scottish country dancing as a child.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, doing it or watching it or both?
Pardon?
Doing it, watching it or both?
Doing it.
Nice.
Yeah, doing it. As a child, I loved it, yeah. Saw dance and, you know, yeah. And I can't remember quite place you with your age, but I don't, when I was at school, we had the movement and mime on the radio. Do you remember that?
No.
And, you know, it was hilarious and very sort of, you know, and reach for the sky. And, you know, sort of, so we'd all, you know, but I loved it. I loved it, yeah. You know. It was just, I could completely lost myself in that programme. It was about half an hour long. BBC used to have these very sort of, you know, like very controlled, scripted sort of programmes on the radio for children. And this was very, you know, now you should reach down to the ground and reach for the sky and, you know, reach for those clouds. And I really did, yeah. And yeah, watching dancers, I love, you know. I don't go very much, but yeah.
Oh, that's as good an answer as I'm going to get. I've had a few who have said dancing, to be a dancer. Anything coming up, Kate? I know it's a bit of a precarious time for everyone.
Well, there's something that's cancelled last year, a show with Graham Crowley, who's got his gallery now in Suffolk.
Nice.
And he invited me to be in a show, which should have been in August. That didn't happen. So it's called Silent Disco, which is interesting.
Yeah.
You know, and there's some really good painters in it. And
I was going to ask whether he's got you there to dance or to submit an artwork.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. I mean, silent disco for me is an interesting one, because when I take my hearing aid out, when I get tinnitus, I've got a lot of silent discos going on in my head.
Yeah.
So when that show came up with the title, it was like, wow, because I was experiencing all this tinnitus.
Yeah.
So it is like a bit of a disco in your head going on, which you really don't want, you know. And I did, for me, that immediately brought up images of handbags and, you know.
Of course, yeah.
And the handbags in the 70s. And I've got a piece of the work for that in mind. But apart from that, no, nothing. Nothing's on the horizon. But I did the show, and brought in David invited me to do a piece on the platform at Collier Bristow. And within a 2 weeks of it opening, it was closed down.
Yeah, I saw that. She was quite upset about that, wasn't she?
Yeah.
I saw that little post she put up. That was
quite emotional, wasn't
it?
Yeah,
yeah, that was lovely. Yeah.
I would say that's probably the most ambitious piece of work I've done.
Yeah.
And it came, you know, at the right time. Turned out I was feeling better, but it was still quite challenging physically to get that work done.
Yeah.
Which, unless you've been ill and had long-term sort of like effects of it, you don't really understand. But like, wow, that was like, I managed it in a day, and it was like, I was exhausted for quite a long time afterwards.
Yeah.
And then it closed, you know? so I was thinking, for me, if I can get through that by maybe taking every little item from it and photographing it and talking, you know, writing a bit about it, that might help me come to terms with the fact that it was never really shown.
Yeah.
It's a work that, you know, Roger did a great job of cataloguing it, getting it out there and sort of getting a film and stuff. But every little thing in that show, if I could just somehow go over it again for myself. Yeah. I think about that last night. I wrote a few notes about it, might call it every little thing, and just talk about what each object, why it was there, what it meant.
Yeah.
And, you know, anybody else interested, they can read about it. But for me personally, it would be quite an achievement because it left me hugely disappointed because, you know, it's like, oh, and I, you know, I got paid to do it. It was lovely. It's a really nice opportunity. And then, and a lot of people contacted me and said, oh, Kate, it'd be really nice to meet you. Can I meet you? And then you can talk me through your work and then we can go for a coffee. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to, now I'm better. I'm going to be more sociable.
Excellent.
And all those plans are just like, And it felt very much like, yeah, this is my time now to be sociable and start meeting. Because I'm not very well, I go to private view, I can't hear anything. Hearing aid just amplifies a load of noise. And, you know, even the pub afterwards, it's like, what, you know. I can't just stay up.
Well, where can people see your work online, be it website or social media?
Where can they see it?
Yeah.
I would say Instagram. I'm trying to really get onto Instagram more. I think my blog is the place that I write more about my work and say more about my work, and actually it's more up to date than anything else on my website, and that's all things I'm going to try and address during the lockdown. I haven't updated my website for quite a while, and that's a bit embarrassing, but I suppose there's not a lot to update it with.
What can you do?
You know, but I've been writing a blog on AN for about 9 years.
Yeah.
And I think I've tried to stop it, but I've realised that's where I put everything.
Yeah, you've had a good relationship with him, haven't you?
Yeah, it's changing. It's changing because, you know, it's sort of, they don't sort of advertise the blog in the way they used to. Maybe they're more short staff, but, you know, I liked when the artists talking, artists really talk to each other, but then...
Yeah.
They moved to another site and we lost a lot of those connections, I think.
Well, social media has come out in between those times you're talking about, and it's so much easier for people to speak now. You know, you can speak with artists sort of anywhere nowadays, you know, so easily. And I used to love Artist Newsletter. It felt just a little bit more special, you know. I haven't read it for quite some time, unfortunately.
Right.
Well, Kate, that's all my questions asked.
That's lovely. Yeah, no, they're really good questions, actually. They're easy and not sort of, feels more conversational, do you know what I mean?
But I'm so pleased to have finally got to chat with you, albeit not in person. Your work has meant quite a lot to me ever since I met you, really. I've loved it so much.
Really nice. Thanks. Thank you very much for your time.
There you go, Kate Murdoch, one of my favourite people in the art world. I was so looking forward to sitting down with Kate and finding out more about her work. And I'm sure you could hear that little bit of excitement in my voice. Once this podcast is finished, go over to Kate's website or her social media page and you could see what all the fuss was about. Who says nostalgia ain't what it used to be, eh? And while you're there, give her a few likes and say hello. So that's it for this week's episode. I've got a few cracking episodes recorded, but I've not sorted out yet in what order they're going to be released. And I've got some absolute beauties lined up to be recorded. But that's for another week. Like I say every week, on whichever platform you listen to this podcast, you should be able to leave a comment. If you could do that, that really does help us get noticed and anyone else looking for an art podcast. If you've got any queries, drop us a line on social media, at ministryofarts.org. If you're enjoying these episodes, spread the word of the Ministry of Arts podcast. If you're not, well, fuck you. You won't be listening to this bit anyway. And those of you that are, thanks for listening. And until next week, ta-da.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.